Thank you, Tanya. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the IGO-INDO Working Group call on Wednesday, 30th of October, 2013, at 16 UTC. On today's call, we have Jim Bykoff, Avery Doya, Elizabeth Finberg, Chuck Gomes, Alan Greenberg, Judd Lauder, Thomas Rickett. We have David Hisley, Greg Shatton, and Claudia McMaster-Tamaret. We have apologies from Osvaldo Novoa, Christopher Rassi, and David Maher. And from staff, we have Mary Wong, Barry Cobb, and myself, Julia Chauvelin. May I please remind all participants to please state your names before speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you, and over to you, Thomas.
Thank you so much. My name is Thomas Rickert, and I'm chairing this working group, and I would like to welcome all of you to this call, which is scheduled to take 2 hours, and let's see whether we have to fully exhaust this time budget. As usual, I would like to ask whether there are any requests to change the agenda or whether there are changes to statements of interest. Hearing and reading none in the chat, we can move to the next agenda item, and that's the chair's update. Actually, I don't have that much to update you on. As you know, the reply period of the public comment period is going to end tomorrow, so we do not yet know if, and if so, how many further public comments we're going to receive. So I guess that we will only be able to discuss comprehensively and in an exhausting manner the public comments after the public comment period has closed. However, we've seen some activity on the mailing list, and ICANN staff in particular has been very busy updating documents that you've seen on the list. Also, ICANN staff has discussed with the ICANN General Counsel with respect to the question of how we could best present the recommendations that make it to the final version to the GNSO Council, so that the council can actually deliberate and take a decision. And we will discuss these items, I guess, during this part of the agenda, before we then move to the review of the public comments that we received in the review tool. Now, I would like to start by giving both Claudia and Greg, who have written to the list, the opportunity to explain their comments to the group, because I'm not sure that all participants of this call have actually had the opportunity to read and consider their submissions. So, Claudia, would you be prepared to explain to the group the concerns that you voiced on the mailing list?
Hello, Thomas. Yes. Thank you for that opportunity. It's the same position that we've held for a couple of months now, I think, regarding the issue of characterizing our level of consensus for recommendation of blocking acronyms. And we say for any international organization, in particular, I think it's IGOs that have a particular resonance, because they're asking for a block of their acronyms, whether other international groups are not. We are very deeply concerned that that the characterization of our consensus level as divergence, which means no consensus, that there is no strong opinion about whether or not to block the acronym, can be very misleading, particularly since this is, quite frankly, one of the most controversial and important topics that has come up in our deliberations. We feel very strongly that it's important to clearly word what our feelings are in this particular group, and they have been shown, and I think it's also reflected in the public comments, as others have repeated, that most, if not the consensus, is against a block of acronyms. So we would like to recommend either that we remove this recommendation, since it did not get enough support other than a minority opinion, from the list of recommendations that we are putting forth, and allow, of course, for the minority positions to fully explain their position, as ISO has done in other cases like this, ISO IAC has done, or we reword the recommendation. Now, I understand that there is a bit of a difficulty with rewording the recommendation, and we don't need to do this, but I do think that we need to address this issue, and I'm afraid that the last if you would like to call it solution, which has shown, the levels not supporting or the individual groups that were not supporting this recommendation is not clear enough. I don't think that a person reading this recommendation, unfamiliar with our deliberations, will see from the, five or six or how many organizations have not supported this recommendation, will get really the actual gist of what has happened, which is there is a minority position supporting it, but that's it. It's not enough, even for strong support. So that's basically our proposal. I think that Greg has chimed in as well, and I'm sure that he can much better and more clearly state his sentiments. But we would like to recommend that this recommendation be stricken from the recommendations because it does not have enough support to be a recommendation, and that it be left to the minority view holders to elaborate what they'd like to elaborate in this report. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Claudia. I guess that we will discuss this a little bit later in this call, but first let's hear from Greg.
This is Greg Shatton. Thank you for the opportunity to talk through what I put in my email. As a general matter, I agree with what Claudia has put forth, and for the purposes of discussion, I set out a couple of other options. In my email, the first is consistent with Claudia's, which is just to remove these unsupported quote-unquote recommendations altogether, since they are not recommendations. They're just discarded recommendations or failed recommendations. And at one point, I think we had a list of things that we considered, but that fell, short of becoming recommendations. That seems to have disappeared. For better or worse, if it was still there, I would say that this should be added to that list. But since that list doesn't exist, striking it seems to be the option. Another option, perhaps too creative with regard to the consensus levels, is to change the consensus level to minority view, since that's defined as a proposal where a small number of people support the recommendation. That would seem to be an accurate representation of the level of consensus. It does open a couple of issues up. First, should all the other failed recommendations be put back as minority views, assuming that somebody supported them along the way? Also, the description of minority view takes the position that it should generally be stated in response to a positive consensus level, or at least of divergence or above, or as the position of a small number of people where there's neither support nor opposition by the remainder of the group. Somehow it left out the idea of it being supported by a small number of people where there is clear opposition by the remainder of the group. Maybe nobody thought that a working group would ever end up in this dilemma, but we have. And it's also not clear whether these are intended to be exclusive circumstances in which the statement of minority view can be expressed, or whether those are only exemplars. And if they are only exemplars, then I think we do have, it is within our purview to take on and put in minority view as an expression of these positions, if we want to keep these in the recommendation matrix at all, in which case we probably should put into the introduction to the recommendation matrix that this includes things that are not, in fact, recommendations per se of the working group, because they did not get at least a level of divergence support from the working group. For that matter, I ask whether divergence level of consensus is sufficient to characterize a potential recommendation as an actual recommendation of the group. But I did not put that in my email, and maybe we, if we did answer that question in the negative, we'd have to remove quite a number of these from the matrix. And the matrix is useful in showing the conclusions of the group, even if they are not all recommendations as such. Another result, which I think is an absurd result, would be to have a minority view or a series of minority views, which would add up together to a majority of the group, in opposition to this falsely divergent characterization, or perhaps a single minority view supported by a majority of the group, which in fact would be a majority view, which I guess is not formally a level of consensus, except if it is considered a level of consensus against. This would not only be absurd make work, but would slow down the group. Nonetheless, I put it in the list as a possible outcome that because for divergence levels, the protocol seems to call on the chair to strongly encourage minority views to be put into the group, to be put in response to divergence. But without the minority views being tallied, it's not clear to the reader, except for the exceptionally close reader, that in fact the minority views in opposition to a divergence add up to a majority of the group. You know, furthermore, the IPC has not seen fit to put in minority views, and I, you know, that's, which is fine. But you know, we're not saying it as such, so it's, you know, wouldn't be quite as clear. But I don't think it should be necessary to put in a minority view every time one takes a position that is, you know, in counter to the consensus position that's stated. The last suggestion I have is to drop a footnote that essentially explains what our true view is of consensus against, and that somehow we've gotten here. We shouldn't have gotten here, perhaps, but due to the nature and complexity of the recommendations that we were dealing with, we took the matrix path, which unfortunately ended up with us perhaps not having a formal choice available to us to properly reflect the will of the group. And furthermore, asking that perhaps be considered in the future that consensus against or some other methodology be developed to deal with this situation, or that individual working groups find a way to avoid finding themselves in this kind of paradoxical situation. There's a block of text in my email which I will not read out. I can paste it in the chat. It will be quite long, but I'll paste it into the chat for consideration. But essentially it says, this isn't really divergence. Don't look at this as divergence. This is really not supported. You know, vote against this and keep moving if you, you know, presuming that you want to take our recommendation, which is don't take this recommendation. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Greg. And before I respond to both what you and Claudia said, I would like to give both Alan and Chuck the opportunity to also chime in. So, Alan, please.
Thank you. I'm not sure I would have put up my hand if I knew I was going to have to follow Greg. I'm not sure. I'm not sure I can follow that. I guess I have two comments to make, and I'll try to keep them brief. Number one, I really do not see what the problem is of inserting a not in the recommendation and saying, don't do this, and there's a strong consensus that this not be done. You know, because we happen to word it in a positive way, there's nothing to say we can't change the wording. So I really don't understand why, and I think that would convey the message that this working group is trying to give to whoever has to implement the results that we're somehow passing on, than being silent on it, because being silent on it with someone having a minority report does not convey the strong belief that the majority had to not implement this. So that's number one. Number two, I guess Greg made reference to it earlier, but I'm really having a hard time getting my head around us issuing recommendations where we're saying most people didn't agree or there's very strong divergence. The vast majority of PDPs end up with, for better or worse, virtually unanimous or close to unanimous support within the working group of the of the things they call recommendations. And I think we almost need a new definition of the word recommendation here because it's not conforming with what the way it's normally used. So I think we have a possible for great confusion because of how we're doing this. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Chuck.
Okay, thanks. For some reason, I got out of Adobe Connect, so I'm getting back in. a good discussion. To me, the simplest thing to do is to not include any recommendations where there was divergence, which was Greg's first suggestion. And certainly I think Claudia was suggesting that, at least in the case of acronyms. If we do it for one, we should do it for all. I think it's very clear from the public comments that there was confusion in what we were recommending and what we were not. That's a message I think we should get from the public comments. An awful lot of people thought we were recommending things we weren't, and so they tried to talk us out of that. And part of the problem, I believe, is this very issue that Greg and Claudia are talking about. Now, that said, in a totally different part of the report than the recommendations part, we need to show, and maybe it's through the matrix again, the recommendations where that were considered, but there was not enough support. So, but again, it needs to be totally separated from the recommendations part to try and minimize the confusion with regard to that was created in the public comment period. Some of the other options that Greg mentioned, I think they're workarounds, and I think the simple that are complicated. Getting a whole bunch of people to submit minority reports is going to be a challenge. Practically, the other options, I think, are more complicated, and the simplest option is to just not include those. And by the way, I think it's consistent with the working group guidelines. The category of divergence still applies to our work, and we did not reach consensus on the recommendations we would move to another part of the report as non-recommendations. So I don't think we're going against the working group guidelines at all. So that would be my recommendation, and I'll stop there.
Thanks very much, Chuck. Let me briefly respond to what all of you have commented on, and you know, those of you who are attending all these calls will surely notice that I've said some of what I'm going to say at least once, but I think given the emotional debate at times that we have surrounding the subject, I think it's still worthwhile saying it one more time. Greg said that we're in a dilemma. Are we in a dilemma? I guess we're not. Have we stated things sufficiently clear to avoid confusion of the reader of the draft final report? Certainly not. I guess we should have done a better job explaining what we're at as a working group, and I'm more than happy to take my share of, or if not all, responsible for that, for having caused that confusion. However, I think that the approach which I have sort of defended earlier is the correct one. The working group guidelines have a scale of consensus levels, and we have used that vocabulary when we started the consensus call, and it was only after we initiated the consensus call that we have identified that some of you would have liked to phrase the question in a different way, or to phrase the consensus level, or to use a different term for the consensus level, which is the consensus against idea. And at that time, I've said that we can't change potential answers while the consensus call is going on, and I stick to that. I think it's not appropriate to change the rules of a game while you're playing it. That, however, does not in any way prevent us from drawing our conclusions from the subsequent comments and from the deliberations that we have. So I will also state that the outcome, i.e., the strong views against support, are well noted, and this should go into the report, that's for sure. I think the genesis and the history of the recommendations that we're discussing should be reflected in the report. I also recommended, and ultimately I, as chair, sort of had to guide the group on that one, and I did not note any severe objection to my decision that we stick to the vocabulary, also for the reason that we've phrased all the recommendations in a certain manner. We asked the community, do you support this? Do you support that? Do you support the other? And in order to meet some of the commenters' concerns, we would only have phrased the recommendation about the IGO acronym protection in a different way, which is, do you not support? And then certainly the outcome could have been full consensus or rough consensus. But I think that it would have been a discriminatory approach to only phrase one of the recommendations in a different way than we phrase all the other recommendations. So I think that the approach that we took from the methodological approach was the correct one. Now, having said that, what do we make out of that for the report as well as for the recommendations? For the report, I guess we need to be very clearly describing what has happened, and that actually the outcome of our consensus call, unless there are changes to that in the reminder of the public comment period, is that there are strong views against such protections, and that in fact only the organizations benefiting from these protections themselves have asked them to be protected. So that should go into the report. As far as the phrasing of the recommendations is concerned, I know that ICANN staff has consulted with General Counsel earlier this week, and I said that earlier in this call already, and there has been some recommendation from General Counsel on how we should phrase our recommendations, and in order to fill us in on the latest developments there, I would very much like to welcome Mary to give an update to the group. And Mary, I know that you've been patient for quite a while raising your hand in the chat, but I hope that you forgive me for making you wait, because I thought that I should make some introductory remarks before reaching this stage of my statement, where I think your comments will perfectly fit in.
Thank you, Thomas, and not at all. I think it was very helpful for everyone to get caught up on this discussion, since it was started a while ago. So I'm not sure I'll be actually answering the question that Claudia and Greg have been addressing, but in an effort to maybe help guide this process through to what for us as a working group would be the ultimate outcome, which is a vote in front of the GNSO Council, in talking with our legal colleagues, one approach that we thought might be helpful, that might minimize at least some of the confusion, is going back to what Alan said in one of his comments in this call, which is that when pretty much in order for the council to vote on something, they're really voting for the most part on consensus, full consensus or near consensus recommendations. That's generally been the case, and that makes a lot of sense. So the recommendation here is that while we have this report that lists every single recommendation more or less chronologically, the package to go up to the council for voting would package the recommendations according to which were consensus recommendations and which are not. So strong support, significant opposition, divergence, and so forth. On the basis that the council, in its usual fashion, would, of course, thank the working group, adopt the report, and vote on the recommendations where there was consensus. So that's sort of the broad recommendation in terms of packaging the recommendations. You'd have a package of consensus recommendations and a package of the others, or several sub-packages of the others. You could put the strong support ones together, the divergent ones in another package. The understanding would also be that the council should, and presumably would, of course, discuss some of the recommendations that did not get consensus. either for further action or for further clarification and so forth. And particularly, this would apply to the ones that had strong support but did not reach consensus. On the point Claudia and Greg have been discussing, something that staff has been thinking of doing is if the working group agrees with this package recommendation that we're talking about now, that specific recommendation under discussion right now could have a table. Well, it wouldn't really be a table, it would be a single entry, but essentially a little table of its own, and we could indicate in a column the consensus against that, however we word it, that Claudia and Greg are talking about. We could say that there actually is strong support to do something the opposite in a separate column, and that way we think that that might minimize some potential confusion over the classification of that particular recommendation as divergent. So it seemed, as Thomas says, a good point to throw that out to the group in terms of an approach going forward, both for the general recommendations overall as well as for this specific one that's been quite troubling for some members.
Thomas, you may be on mute.
Sorry, I was on mute. I have invited Chuck to speak, and then I said, well, Chuck, you might be on mute, but actually he has not heard me inviting him. So, Chuck, please, fire up.
Thanks, Thomas. Well, first of all, some of what staff recommended, I think, is fine, but I think it has a level of complexity that I'm uncomfortable with. Certainly, separating the consensus recommendations and the strong support recommendations seems okay. I don't have any big problem with that. But again, as far as all the rest, the things that did not reach at least strong support, I really think they need to be in a different part of the report. To minimize confusion, and as soon as we start mixing them all together, the ones that didn't receive at least strong support, I think we create confusion, and that's what we saw in the public comment period. So I don't know if I heard all of what Mary said correctly, but that's my response to that.
Thanks, Chuck. Greg, please.
The problem I have here is that we seem to have ended up in some sort of bureaucratic wonderland, or perhaps through the looking glass. And I think that this is that the result of calling something divergence, which is not in fact divergence, is a result that only George Orwell and Alice Through the Looking Glass could find acceptable. I don't. I think the truth here is rather simple, and all of these complicated workarounds and other solutions, you know, are far more complicated because we seem to have somehow become embroiled in a situation where the truth is a slave to bureaucratic complexity, when indeed all of this should be a slave to expressing the truth, which is that divergence doesn't accurately reflect the position of the group, and that even those where divergence does accurately reflect the position of the group, in that we all kind of rode off in different directions with no strong consensus evolving in either direction, that neither of those are in fact recommendations, and I do support Chuck's position that those should not be in the table along with the real recommendations that we have labored so long and so hard to come to a positive level of consensus for. I just think, you know, we see, I disagree with your statement that we're not in a dilemma. I think a number of us feel we're in a dilemma, I think we can't just resolve this by saying that we're not in a dilemma, because, you know, that's just kind of another way of avoiding the truth, which is that we either have to find a way to express the truth or we've failed as a working group and the report fails, and whatever our timing is, and I would like, obviously, to get this in front of the GNSO Council, because one of my other huge concerns here is that we're sitting in this virtual room debating. Meanwhile, the world is moving on with the GAC and the board dealing with many of these same concerns without our input. And by the time we get to the station, the train will be gone, and we'll be in the position of, stating or demanding that the GNSO Council call the train back to the station, and that, will be no fun at best, regardless of the result. It'll be interesting. I enjoy train crashes, on a model train table, but not in in ICANN, not too much at least. So I think that, what we need to do is to find with speed a way to reflect what the true position of this group is, and whether it's inserting not or putting things out for another consensus call or taking everything out that's not a recommendation and, tagging appropriately those things that are not really divergence so that they can be distinguished from things that really are divergence, so that it is clear on its face to a reader of not necessarily a native English speaker reader as well, since we have to be considerate of them. And, until this thing is, God forbid, translated into other languages, it may not be possible to transcribe the sound of disdain and amazement that I just made. But I really think that we need to get past this in a way that the group can agree that we have expressed the agreement or lack thereof of the group. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. And before I move to Ellen and Chuck, let me briefly respond to your response with respect to the dilemma issue. I guess that, due to business travel, I haven't been able to properly consult with staff, but my thought on this is that actually we should only include those recommendations in the recommendation section of the report that are recommendations to act. So this working group recommends that certain action is taken. We do not recommend certain action not to take. Otherwise, the cynic participants of this group might wish to add recommendations not to cross the road when the lights are red. So we should only include those recommendations that actually should be implemented, in our view, while the other recommendations that did not reach consensus level should be in another section of the report. And certainly in that section of the report, there should be the full history and also the rationale for why these are not have not made it to the recommendation section. And that certainly will include the views, the various views against others, but also this very recommendation that was in the draft report with respect to IGO acronyms. Ellen, please.
Thank you. I guess I have to agree with Greg on the Alice through the looking glass surreal part of this. Our whole purpose in life here is to provide some clarity as to what the community believes should be done. And in this particular case, if there is a strong consensus not to do something, and this happens to be one which has been discussed widely in the general community, and there's a very strong consensus among large parts of the community that acronyms should not be put into restricted lists, that there are too many valid uses of them. So a negative recommendation, I think, is quite appropriate, because it does echo what the community believes. The community believes that the board puts acronyms into the restricted list, or at least many in the community, that they would be doing something wrong. And so I don't think at all it's wrong to put something in the negative. To have phrased the question in the negative would have been discriminatory. To simply reverse it as a semantic measure to be able to reflect the results, I think, is reasonable. Remember, as one of the people who was around when we came up with these consensus levels, the intent was to be able to identify things that did have consensus, and we weren't trying to come up with definitions at the other end of the scale If we had foreseen this, we might have, but that wasn't the target. So I think our whole game aim should be to clearly put through messages as to what the community believes should and should not be done. And whatever mechanism we need to do that, I think we need to get on with it. Thank you.
Alan, just a little follow-up question. So removing that from the recommendations section with a response to the acronym question and another section of the report would not suffice, in, according to your view?
I could probably live with it if that's what we're doing with everything, but I believe we're omitting a significant part of our final results and messages, which it turns out is not just a trivial one that no one cares about, but is one of the more substantive discussions that's been going on. So I think we're doing a disservice by doing that. So be it.
Thanks, Alan. Chuck.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody's suggesting omitting it. Just putting it in a different place so that there's no confusion. We should be very clear. Now, the reason I raised my hand is to say I think we have a new recommendation. I'm sure everybody's excited to hear that. But it doesn't have to do with IGO, INGO acronyms. I think we should make a recommendation in our report, separate from our on-topic recommendations, that the working group guidelines be reviewed with regard especially to the term divergence. And in the case where we do reflect the strong opinion against certain recommendations, we should say more than divergence, like several have advocated. We should say, if it's the case, consensus against. We can use the term divergence to stay with the working group guidelines, but really what, in some cases, it really wasn't divergence, as Greg and Claudia have said. It was consensus against, or at least strong support against. But again, I maintain that should be in a separate part of the report, but not to hide it, just to make it very clear what we're recommending in one place, and then fully report what we found in the other cases elsewhere in the report. Thanks.
Chuck, thanks. But just to be clear, I had at least intended to make exactly the recommendation that I thought you now have described, i.e. having recommendations that are carried in the recommendation section, certainly not sweep anything under the carpet, but explain or put the other recommendations that didn't make it to that very section of the report in another area or in another section of the report and explain the history to it. And certainly that would also be a place where we can put our struggling with the terminology of the working group guidelines. And in fact, this is something that I would have brought to the attention of the council anyway with the recommendation to take this to the SCI.
And Chuck, Thomas, this is Chuck again. I'm in agreement with what you're saying and what you said before. Alan made a comment that kind of indicated he might be okay with them being mixed, and I just wanted to make clear I don't think they should be mixed. So I'm in agreement with you.
Thank you. Greg. Sorry. Greg, did you have your hand up, or was that?
There's a hand under that check mark.
Okay, so please go ahead.
I'll take down the check mark so you can see the hand. I'm not sure whom I am agreeing with at this point, but just state that I think that it does make sense to take the divergence and beyond quote-unquote recommendations out of the recommendations table and put them in another table of not recommendations. And I do agree that this should be, brought to the council and to the SCI for consideration. I think also should consider whether, another possibility is that minority view can be a position independent of being in opposition to another position. But I think that it's also important if we do put the not recommendations into a separate table to further distinguish between those things that are authentically divergent, where the group essentially cannot state that it has a position to which enough people agree, and then what we are talking about here, which are the consensus against positions, need to be you know, separately brought out. Otherwise, we somehow muted or hidden the will of the group as being in opposition or of the majority of the group or a consensus level of the group to be in opposition. And let me state also for the record that I am not arguing this because I have a strong position against acronyms personally or for the IPC. The IPC's own view on this was divergent. Rather, I'm looking at this as a matter of process and as a matter of expression of the will of a working group. So even if I were madly in favor of acronym protection, I would still be saying exactly what I'm saying because I think that, you know, I'm not a sore loser if I were, in fact, a loser in that case. I believe in the process, and I believe that the process, that the results need to fairly reflect the results of the process. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Greg. And while we're talking, I think I should emphasize again that we're still in the public comment period. So things that or plans that we're now discussing are certainly subject to potential changes to what we're doing and what our thinking is pending the outcome of the public comment period. But certainly, if we put the recommendations or the draft recommendations that don't make it to the recommendation section into another area of the report, that is the place where we should actually describe the group's difficulties with the terminology and actually the support level, i.e. the lack thereof for the specific recommendation. Alan, please.
Yeah, 2 points. Before, I think you said, and you've just reiterated again, that we should put our thoughts on the difficulty with the terminology in another section. And then you said we should make a recommendation to the council and the SCI to do something. It is completely within our rights to make a recommendation which has nothing to do with the subject and is not passed on to the board for implementation. We can make recommendations to council, and if we want council to be bound and to act on it, we should make a recommendation, even though it's not on the subject matter. There's nothing forbidden on that. That's on the terminology thing. But I want to remind everyone that there are many, many people, and that may include board members, who only read the executive summary with the recommendations. And if we are putting something where there was a strong consensus not to do something in another section, it is essentially taking it out of the public view to the vast majority of people who are not going to read the 100-page report. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Let me state as an interim result that I think the group is now arguing to agree that the recommendations on substance, on topic, should be limited to those that actually have been carried by the group, that the recommendations that did not make it should be placed elsewhere. I also understand that there is the proposal of some of you, including Alan, to have an additional recommendation bringing the consensus scale issue to the attention of the council. I guess we will need to find an appropriate wording for that. And I guess that we might even be able to phrase that very recommendation in a way that either in the resolved clause or in a draft whereas clause sort of gives some of the history so that your aim, Alan, is accommodated, that we bring this to the attention of the reader in the recommendation section that the group sort of had difficulty with the divergence, and then we can even mention that very recommendation. So maybe that's something where we can work together on a set of words. Alan, is that something that could sort of address your concern?
Yeah, I'm not, in terms of the terminology and the fact that we found the workgroup rules insufficient to meet our needs, as I said, I think that's something we should bring up as a formal recommendation. It's not on the subject matter, but it's a recommendation. I guess I can't pass judgment until I see what we're talking about, but I believe that if the workgroup discussed an issue and we came to general agreement on it, and it is an important substantive issue as this one is, it should show up in the recommendations. But, you know, I may be in a minority on that.
Any more views on that? I see Avery supporting it. Chuck.
Yes, thanks, Thomas and Alan. What if we were to, now, first of all, in the chat, I suggested, I don't think we're going to be able to put the recommendations in the executive summary as is usually done, but I think it would be a good idea to put the recommendations right after the executive summary, and then we could follow with a section of considerations that were not did not achieve sufficient support, and so still early in the report we have what Alan is suggesting there, that we make clear that there, for example, there was strong support against acronyms. So, but again, as long as they're separate, I'm okay with that. And so we would have an executive summary, our recommendations, and then our a section, and somebody may have a better idea on this, a section that shows positions that were seriously considered that did not receive sufficient support. And then that's where we could put that there was strong support against acronyms, et cetera, and some cases of actual divergence. So I'll leave it at that and let others talk.
Thanks, Chuck. I see some support for your suggestion in the chat. Let me ask Barry, who's the main drafter of this report, whether you think that this restructuring is feasible.
Hi, Thomas. It's Barry. I'll give it a shot. With the draft final report, we tried shifting sections around, and it really messed up all the numbering of the template itself. But I'll give it a shot again, and if not, then maybe we can just move it to a whole new document.
Okay, thanks, Barry. So unless I hear concerns or oppositions from the group, I guess that we will try to implement as Chuck recommended in terms of structure, and in terms of the presentation of the recommendations, we will try to work along the lines that we discussed earlier. Certainly, I should also bring to your attention that with respect to the draft recommendation on opening up UDRP and URS, we will need to slightly rephrase that according to General Counsel's suggestions or recommendations, so that this will read something along the lines of that the working group recommends that an issue report for a possible PDP on UDRP URS access for IGOs is written. So that's just for the sake of being complete, and now let me go back to the queue, and it's Greg's turn.
Thank you, Greg Shatton, again. I think that approach is a good one. I support Chuck, and I just wanted to underline that part of what I heard Chuck say was that the cases of true divergence should be distinguished or segregated from those cases that we may have felt forced to label divergence, but which are in fact a consensus against. And maybe if they're no longer recommendations per se, we can call them consensus against. In any case, we need to make sure not to blend those cases where we couldn't find a position with those cases where we found a position that was not in favor of a recommendation. Thank you.
That's well understood. Thanks, Greg. Chuck.
Okay, so I have a totally new question In the registry comments, we treated the options that were considered for implementation, like an exception procedure and the also the some other cases, as recommendations. But I'm curious, how are those going to be portrayed? Like, for example, how to deal with existing registries. Are those going to be considered as part of the recommendations? Are they implementation issues that were discussed, and here's what we talked about? That's important, because those were handled a little bit differently in terms of the consensus call and then so forth. So it's important that we know how and where we're going to put those things.
Thanks, Chuck. That's a very good question. Actually, while I was putting my brains at work to find an answer for you, Barry gave me an easy way out by raising his hand. So fire away, Barry.
Thank you, Thomas. It's very, Chuck, yeah, it's a very good question, especially some of the feedback that we received from the public comments and in regards to how this will affect the incumbent GPLDs. Up to this point, we've only positioned how the incumbent GPLDs are affected, not as necessarily, it was more to do with implementation than necessarily policy changes that needed to be approved or adopted by the council and the board separately. Although, having said that, I've highlighted in the current version of the report that we really need to take a much more closer look at what we've listed there to first alleviate any confusion that may have been interpreted in terms of how some of our recommendations would be implemented. But more to the point, I'm curious if some of what we have written there aren't necessary. Maybe they should be positioned in a way that they are recommendations. But whatever the outcome, I do agree we need to promote that section so that it is cleanly visible by the council and the board and those that are considering it from this point forward. And I'm not sure exactly what the best approach of that should be.
Thanks, Barry. Chuck, I'm not entirely sure whether that's a new hand.
It is, Thomas, because I want to throw out an idea in response to what Barry just said. What if we were to add a fourth section right off that's implementation considerations, and combined with that, recommend that an implementation review team be established? I'm just throwing that out for people's consideration. That's one way we could approach it.
Well, I think that since implementation oversight is, in my personal view, too much neglected, that's the door is wide open as far as I'm concerned. I see support from Avery, and I'd liken it open up to the group to respond, but I think that's an excellent idea to ensure that our thinking sort of is accurately implemented. Because, as you know, while some of the recommendations that we've made have been very specific, others don't have a level of granularity that guarantees an implementation that can't be criticized by some. Mary.
Thanks, Thomas. So, Chuck, picking up your point, I think what you're getting at is some of the newer developments that have happened, particularly in relation to council votes. I'm thinking specifically of the last vote on the working group for locking up a domain name, where there was an implementation review team, if I'm getting the terminology correct. I don't have the language in front of me, but it seems to me as staff that we can certainly have that. I mean, how we do that in the report in question, but certainly that should be something that the council should be able to include in its motion, vote on, and adopt.
Thanks, Mary. Any further comments on that? Alan.
It has become standard practice to not only have implementation review teams, but for the working group to recommend that there be one. So it's certainly within the standard process for us to make that statement.
Good. So I guess there's not much more to add to that, so we will include that. I'm virtually looking at Barry, whether I've omitted anything in that should be discussed in this section of the agenda. And if this is not the case, I would like to ask Barry to actually take over for a while and discuss the latest changes to the public comment review tool with the group.
Thank you, Thomas. Alan, is that your old hand? I just want to make sure you were covered before I move on.
Sorry, old hand all over.
Thank you. I'd like to just touch upon real quick two comments that were submitted by Chuck with regard to the public comment review tool. You'll notice we sent out to the list last night some suggestions that Chuck had made, and I've incorporated those into this version of the review tool, but I was confused about one. I just wanted to make sure that I highlighted it for the group to review before I made the update into the tool, which is in regards to row 10, and this was the public comment that was submitted by the ICA. Again, their abstract was that they support reservation and or trademark claim protections of exact match full names at the second level, but they don't support any recommendation to reserve acronyms or the use of claims notification for those acronyms. And then, of course, they could support the possible use of curative RPM. And I just wanted to highlight So Chuck had included for comment 10 stating that he didn't think that all the comments align with the working group recommendations, so that some rewording to the working group response seemed like a good idea. And what he offered up as a suggestion is that they align with regard to blanket protection of acronyms, blocking full names, and distinguishing between trademarks in the TMCH. But I don't think that they align with regard to including acronyms in the PMCH. And I think what confused me here, Chuck, was the first part of the statement about with regard to blanket protection of acronyms. Should that be the no protection of acronyms? If I understood
that,
or I should,
yeah,
I should
that's
say,
fine. I was writing that on my flight back from Bali, so.
Okay, great. I'll be sure to update that appropriately. I just wanted to confirm. And then I think that there was a second comment that I highlighted here. Yes. And Chuck, again, this is a question for you, and I think that this was a really good response to include here. This was in regards to row 26 about one of the comments submitted around incumbent GPLDs, and it was submitted by George Kurikos. In short, I think he made it clear that he was against recovery of names in existing GPLDs based on existing property rights, et cetera. And Chuck had included a response that basically stated that in our discussions of implementing recommendation for existing GPLDs, we have not recommended changes that could impact existing registration, but rather a possible grandfathering approach that has been used in the past. And I just wanted to ask the question out there, is can someone, Chuck, or anyone point me to issues that have been resolved in the community where we have used grandfathering? And I think that would maybe be at least a good footnote to include in your report, especially the section around how incumbent GPLD should be addressed.
This is Chuck. You put me on the spot. I know as a registry there have been cases where we've done it. They don't pop into my head right now. I see Alan's hand up. He might remember a specific case.
please, Alan.
Names such as IANA have been in use prior to ICANN. When ICANN wrote the rules, they put IANA in the reserve list, but did not attempt to recover it. It is a reserve list. It cannot. It's a name that cannot be allocated, but it's the existing usage of it continues. ICANN.org is another one of those. You know, obviously the name was reserved before all the rules were written associated with ICANN, and there's a whole bunch of them. Well, maybe not a bunch. There's certainly a number of them that the rules were written after the fact, and they were written with the clear knowledge that the domains exist and will continue to exist. Whether there are other consensus policies that we have implemented, and those names entering into reserve list predate consensus policy, whether other consensus policies that had the concept of grandfathering in, I can't think of one right now, but there may well be some. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Chuck, you might have a response.
Sure. Just kind of following up with what Alan said. Looking at the reserve name list, you'll find lots of examples where there are reserve names that are in existence because they were prior to that. I'm like Alan. I'm not sure there was actually a consensus policy where that was specifically advocated. But if it's easier, Barry, to reword that a little bit so that you're more comfortable with it, I don't have any problem with that. The key point is we didn't make any recommendations that existing registrations be removed.
Okay, thank you, Chuck. Very good. I'll update that accordingly. And perhaps maybe some working group members can, I guess I'm thinking about the term grandfathering has been used or can be used in several different fashions and may be confusing to some. I guess I'd be looking for ideas on how we can phrase how we would or how the implementation of this would go about recovering names without infringing on the existing rights. Which I think for the most part, or we at least tried in our first draft, was that, you know, typical domain name lifecycle would be in existence up until the point that that name would never, or that it would not be registered again, I guess up until the point right before that it would re-enter the zone for being available. Alan, please.
Yeah, I made a point when we were discussing this, and I hope it made it into the final report. And to be honest, I'm trying to remember as I read it whether it was or not. But the current practice among registrars allows a name to be effectively reallocated without being deleted. And I made a strong statement that I believe we need to explicitly forbid that, because that bypasses the process and could allow a name that is now on the reserve list to go into a completely new use with a new owner without the involvement of the previous owner. There's not we're saying the previous owner can sell a name. That's the standard domain life cycle. But right now there is a possibility that it could be repurposed with a new owner with no involvement from the old owner, and that I believe we must be explicitly forbidding. I don't
know
whether that was captured in the report or not, but I think it's crucial because otherwise it defeats the whole purpose. We're taking a name that we're saying is going to be reserved in the future and allowing a new user to start using it because of a technicality in the rules, and I think we must be careful about that. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Alan. I think we did try to incorporate a statement of something to that nature in our current draft, and I would just ask working group members to review through that I have it highlighted that we need to review that whole section of the report, but to take a specific aim at that particular statement, make sure that we've got it worded correctly. Chuck, I see you've got a response.
Yeah, just following up to Alan, I think he's right. We need to make that clear. Understanding that what we're talking about here, I think, is an implementation consideration that the implementation review team would deal with, but we should make it clear so that that team does do that.
Great. Thank you, Chuck. Thomas.
Thanks, Barry. I just wanted to make sure that we don't forget talking about a comment that has been made by Avria in the Avri in the chat. She says that selling the name should also be forbidden. And I guess that I would like to hear from Avri how she thinks, or let me directly address you, Avri, how do you think that could be implemented? Because if we don't want to interfere with the normal domain life cycle, both trades as well as transfers are possible. And how could a registrar possibly identify whether a trade of a domain name is actually just due to a renaming of a company or whether that's actually a sale? So I guess that could cause huge issues or huge problems for registrars to actually be compliant with something that might turn out to be a consensus policy.
You want me to spell?
I would like to invite you to do so, yes.
Okay. My thoughts were, I thought that we had various ways to lock names from any transfer. So I would basically be suggesting that these names, once assigned appropriately to their proper entities, are indeed locked and not transferable. You know, now, you're right, we may need a way to transfer from one registrar to another while keeping the same owner. That should be an exceptional thing, and I'm not quite sure how we can remove the lock for that transaction. I expect it's possible. But basically, they should be locked from any transfer.
Okay, just to get the terminology, I'm not saying right, but that we have used common terminology. To me, a move from a registrar to a registrar would be a transfer. So I guess that transfers of domain names should be possible anyway, so that the registrant has the possibility to have the domain name supported by the registrar of his choice. The change of the owner is something that I think should be called trade. And for trades, that one might consider to make a distinction between trades that are the result of a commercial transaction. But if I rename my company from A to B, it's still the same legal entity. However, technically that would be a trade. And I'm not sure whether that's something that we want to ban. Okay, so Avery's responding in the chat. I don't want to spend too much time on this, so I guess we will digest what's in the chat. And Barry, let me get back to you for moderating purposes. Was that you, Avery, trying to speak again? I thought I heard a little.
I was going to, but I don't need to. But we're talking here about institutions and names that are so important that they have to be protected. To then say that we're going to use the logic of the marketplace and trading on names to sort of set the conditions under which they work just doesn't make sense to me. So that's what I mean when I say we're not talking about companies here. We're not talking the Red Cross changing from one owner to another and the name being traded away. We're talking about things that, for some reason, you all have a consensus that says these things are so important, they need to be protected. They say, I'm not part of that consensus. But you all have that consensus, saying that these things are important, they must be protected. And then to say that we're going to treat them like company names that should be able to trade it away on the marketplace just doesn't make sense to me. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. Maybe we take that conversation offline, maybe the example of using the renaming of a company was a bad one, but it was just to illustrate the change between or the differences between trades and transfers. Please, Barry, take back over.
Thank you, Thomas. Alan, you have your hand raised.
Yes, I do indeed. Thank you. First to Thomas, you may think trade is a good term, but the term transfer is being used with regard to changes of registrants. So we can't necessarily change the terminology. It's caused a fair amount of confusion that we're using the same term, and it needs to be clarified. But that's not something that we can unilaterally do. I don't disagree with Avery, but if we're talking about not impacting the rights of someone that someone has acquired by registering a name in the past, one of those rights currently is to be able to sell that name or trade it or whatever. And yes, we could venture into saying that's not allowed. It's going to be very difficult to implement and perhaps violate some of these acquired rights that we've been talking about. The issue I raised was changes of owners where the registrant, the original registrant, is not involved in the process. And those are the ones that I definitely feel we have to make sure don't happen. The kind that Avery's talking about, it's an interesting concept. I suspect it's out of our range. Thank you.
Alan, just for the sake of completeness, I guess I'm not trying to change terminology, but I'm trying to use terminology that's used in the industry. And if you look at the IRTP, for example, it uses trade for changes of registrars. But again, let's take this offline.
And I spent a good part of the last year on the locking domain PDP, and there's been lots of discussion on the term.
All right, great. Thank you, Alan. Chuck, do you have your hand raised?
Yeah, I think this discussion has been good, and I think it reinforces the need for us to recommend that an implementation review team be established and that there be careful consideration of these issues with input from the community because it needs careful consideration and not something that we're going to be able to solve here, at least if we want to get a report out.
Great. Thank you, Chuck.
Barry, can I make a comment on that? It's Alan.
Yes, Alan. Go ahead real quick.
Yeah. I don't disagree that we need an implementation review team, but I think our words need to be crystal clear because I would expect registrars to strongly defend their rights to be able to do what I'm suggesting they shouldn't be allowed to. So our words need to be clear or the community will speak and they will maintain that right for the now forbidden, for the now locked names. So we need to be careful on our wording. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Alan. Greg, I saw your hands raised, but it looked like you took it down, so it's probably Alan said what you were going to say.
Yeah, more or less, although I will take briefly the opportunity to say that, you know, I agree with Avery that, you know, these are not companies, and I don't think that the, you know, Red Cross or IOC, you know, other than some sort of reorganization, is likely to somehow, you know, transfer its names away. And same thing for IGOs. INGOs can sometimes split. I've done, you know, not pro bono work for NGOs that have, you know, split because, you know, multiple missions ended up being put into different separate groups over time. So there is the possibility that if, you know, an advocacy group, you know, piece of a group decides that it needs to be separate, that it should still be allowed to transfer as long as it's, you know, consistent with the mission of the group. God knows, you know, that's definitely implementation level stuff, but I do want to point out that we're talking about several different types of organizations, and, you know, some are more likely to end up, you know, mutating and morphing over time. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. Alan.
Yeah, remember, we're also talking about Olympic Paint. It's currently owned by Pittsburgh Paint or Pittsburgh Plate Glass or something, selling it to some other corporation, and they have Olympic.com. You know, so if Olympic ends up being a restricted term, we're not only talking about the IOC or the Red Cross or an IGO changing their organization, but the commercial or non-commercial entities that currently have rightful uses of these names also being able to do this. So it's not just the IGOs and INGOs we're talking about. Thank you.
All right, great. Thank you, Alan, and thank you, everybody. I think that was a good dialogue. So with that, I think that just concludes the two highlights that I put in the public comment review tool. I invite members to take one last glance at it for any of the working group responses and or the proposed actions. What I have done up to this point was highlighted in comments within our draft final report of those actions that we need to take based on the public comments. Thomas mentioned our public comment period closes tomorrow. I suspect that we'll at least get one or two more that are submitted by at the 11th hour that we'll need to review next week's call, although hopefully we can try to accomplish some of that review or dialogue about any new additions over the list so that we can spend more time on the report. So with that, again, if there are any suggested changes to the public comment review tool, please post them to the list, and I'll be sure to incorporate them in. Certainly after the period closes, I will send up any or I'll append any new additions to the review tool and send that out to the list so that everybody can take a look at it. So, Thomas, that closes out agenda item 3, I believe. And if you want, we can move over to agenda item 4. And I think at a high level, we have discussed much of, one way or another, much of what I had included in here. And hopefully it'll paint on the screen.
I guess, Barry, one question that we should discuss with the group is whether or not, or if so, how we identify individuals that have commented, right?
I'm sorry, I don't think I understood. Can you repeat?
There was the request by the working group that we would include in the recommendation section what groups actually support and who doesn't support the various recommendations. And since we did have several individuals responding, the question was how that should go into the report, if at all.
Oh, yes. Oh, all right. Thank you. That is definitely something that I have highlighted in Section 5.1. It really applies to all the organizations, but I highlighted it with the first section for the Red Cross. And based on our discussions from our previous our call last week, it was determined that at the very minimum, we needed to include those groups that didn't support a particular recommendation, whether it be consensus, divergence, or whatever the outcome was. In this version, I took a first draft chance or stab at including the groups that didn't support the particular recommendations, you know, noting that, you know, these charts will change as we remove divergent recommendations out of them, but even the consensus level recommendations will still contain the groups that didn't support it. One question that I had is, how do we incorporate, or should we incorporate in terms of these highlighting the groups that didn't support, should we include individuals as well? And that was something that was kind of contentious when we were performing our consensus call, is how do you weight a group versus an individual submission? Should we include the individual submission? What will be added to this section of the report is a reference to our formal consensus call document so that readers can see in detail what was submitted by individuals and groups. And then the question here to the working group today is with respect to how we portray those persons or groups that didn't support a recommendation here, should we include the individuals as well? And hopefully we can get that answered. Chuck, I see your hand is raised.
Yeah, I have a suggestion in that regard. I think we have to be careful of making the recommendation section too complicated. I think what you've done here is fine. But what if we were to just have a comment before Section 5.1, in other words, kind of an introductory for Section 5, that refers people to our analysis of the public comments, and I'm assuming, and I guess this is a question, that we will include the matrix that shows, in fact, probably the full matrix of the comments. That's fine with me. It's going to make it long, but as long as it's in an appendix or something that separates it from the main body of the report, that our analysis of the public comments and review of them with our comments and so forth is one of the best ways that I've seen happen in a working group with regard to public comment analysis. So am I correct that that will be included in the report as an appendix? And if so, then I would recommend that we at the beginning of Section 5, we make reference to that and maybe say that in the matrix below, we show groups that participated in the working group and are in the GNSO in terms of where they were, their level of support was different. For individual comments, please refer to the matrix and whatever appendix it is or whatever. Did that, any of that make sense?
Yes, Chuck. Thank you for that. I certainly did, at the very minimum, plan on creating links to the public comment review tool and as well as our document that outlines our formal consensus call. I can certainly add those as appendix or appendices to this report. We're at 84 pages now. That would easily move it into 190 pages by including both of those documents into the report. So I'll go either way, but in terms of trying to keep the report concise, I was really just going to link to them, and we can highlight it in multiple places if need be. But if the will of the group wants me to add them as appendices, I'll be happy to do that as well. Chuck, you raise your hand again.
Yeah, I don't like really long reports, but I guess my own personal leaning, and I'll go with the group's position on this, is that showing responsiveness to the input from the community is so important that I lean towards having it in there. But again, I'll defer to the majority opinion on this.
Thank you, Chuck. Alan.
Yeah, what's been done a number of times is to take the appendices or some of the appendices or attachments, whatever, and package them separately so they're not downloaded as the as part of the report, but they're available at the same place the report is, and that sort of serves both purposes. I strongly favor things that can be downloaded versus pointers. Pointers, especially pointers to the wiki, you know, a year later they change, and someone who wants to look at the historical record find it's gone, or they can't find it. It happens continually. So I really worry about just pointers. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Alan. That's a perfect solution in my mind, and I think most people will sign on to that. So, yes, we'll make them sub-attachments when we present the final report, and then mention it within the report that please refer to the secondary or tertiary attachment. Okay, we've got about 30 minutes left. I think what I would like to draw, several of these other comments that I have listed within this version of the report, I think we more or less touched on, and you know, especially as we reorganize how these particular recommendations are presented. And so I'm going to fast forward just a little bit to one of our general recommendations that I just want to highlight for the group, and I would love to have appropriate feedback from everyone. And this relates down to what is now our just our general recommendations table, and we have one recommendation loaded in there that did receive consensus, which is regarding initiating a PDP for IGOs to possibly have access to the curative rights protection. As Thomas mentioned earlier, I think that this is certainly one recommendation that may not need to be modified here within the report, but I would see that the language would change, at least for the resolution that's being presented to the council. And it's been very specific in the past that, the working group recommends that the GNSO have staff create an issue report for a possible PDP on the utilization of curative rights protections of UDRP and URS for IGO and INGO recommendations. I'm using that off the top of my head. We'll come up with more appropriate language as we start to write the draft resolution. The reason why I bring this up is that I've included a new annex in the report, which is now labeled as Annex 4. And what this is a template for requesting an issue report. And I would like working group members to take a look at the first draft answers that we've included in here and make sure that that's appropriate, and please offer up any suggestions to improve the statements that we've included here. The intent here is to provide the council with a little bit more information as to why an issue report should be created. I think the original intent of the template was at the council level, if a particular stakeholder group wanted to initiate an issue report based on other deliberations or discussions of various issues, that they could, and that this would help inform the council better as they went to deliberate on it. Certainly a recommendation stemming from a working group is a little bit more informed as to why that recommendation is being posted, but I thought that it would still be good material to not only provide the council with information, but also to help provide a little bit of scope for them to consider, and certainly when staff or if staff is assigned to create the issue report, that it gives staff a little bit more guidance as to what should be created here. So I just wanted to draw your attention to it. When you review the report, please pay attention to that particular section and see if there's any wording that should be changed. The only other thing that I'll mention, also, I haven't updated the members' participation list in Annex 3. I'll take another slice of that. A few members have asked me to make a few small changes. I'll ask that you also confirm that you want your name listed here and your affiliation. Just make sure that that is correct as well. And I think with that, let me scroll back. I'm sorry if I'm making you busy with scrolling through the PDF here. I just want to make sure that touch on a couple of other small comments that I made that should warrant your attention.
Hey, Barry, this is Chuck. Are we going to have a table of contents? We really should.
Yes.
Oh, it's there. I'm sorry. I missed it. Ignore me.
Yeah, it's there. It's unfortunately, it's at a higher level and not so granular. That's, again, kind of one of the limitations to this template that I'm using.
That's probably
in terms
okay,
of
for, in my opinion. This Chuck.
Creating substance. And of course, based on the feedback from the working group today, I'll definitely take the action of promoting our recommendations up to Section 2 and then creating a new section for the recommendations that weren't supported. So this version is going to look quite different over the next couple of days. If you do have input to the report, please just send it to the list and not necessarily updating the Word document, and I'll be sure to incorporate them into the next version. because what I'm going to have to do is accept the changes that we have here. When I start moving these sections around, it's going to be unreadable again, just like when we transitioned from the initial report to the draft final report. There is one thing that I wanted to highlight, which is, again, in response to the public comment that we received, which is page 34. And, again, this kind of goes back to our principles of implementation on incumbent GPLDs. And I just wanted to highlight what the ICA had submitted. I think, Chuck, you were the one that originally had mentioned that, you know, if there were going to be any protections applied into incumbent GPLDs, we need to make sure that we try to do what we can to avoid any front-running of those protections. And this may have been confusion about some of our recommendations, but, again, I just wanted to highlight it to make sure that we covered this appropriately. The ICA had submitted, finally, in regard to any incumbent GPLDs, while we appreciate and support the recommendation that any currently registered domain matching a protected IGO or INGO identifier shall be handled like any existing registered name within the incumbent GPLDs regarding renewals, transfers, sale, change of registrant, et cetera, we strongly oppose the adoption of any policy that would, one, define or create a mechanism against the specious and completely speculative possibility of front-running of a domain registration or IGO or INGO identifiers. Two, exclude such a domain from any add drop activities by the registrar in the event that it becomes eligible for deletion, or make such deletion domains ineligible for future re-registration. In any way, sanctions that involuntary seizure or deletion of any identifier exact match acronym domain that is registered now or may be in the future at any incumbent GPLD. Now, the way I took these comments is that the ICA opposed any blocking of any identifier within incumbent GPLD. Is that what I know that we touched on this last week, and Greg helped us highlighting the use of the word specious, if I even said that correctly. I just want to make sure that we understand this. Alan, please.
I think your analysis is correct. They're saying don't touch anything in existing GTLDs, and that was not the wisdom of this working group. You know, the comment says don't do what you said you want to do, and I think unless the position of this group has changed radically, then the answer is thank you for your input. The working group believes that that's not the way to go. I don't see how we can do anything else.
All right. Thank you, Alan. I appreciate that. And I think this kind of touches on what Chuck had mentioned earlier, though, when the registry stakeholder group was formulating their public comments or their position around the current recommendations. We really haven't the principles of implementation were not a part of our formal consensus call, and perhaps maybe we should try to do something like that over the list to see where the level of consensus may exist on this. I my own interpretation, I think that most are supportive of how these policies would be implemented in the incumbent GPLDs, but again, we haven't really made a formal consensus call against it, and I guess my first question should be is, should we do it or not? The ICA's comment is saying don't do it. I think there is the general understanding that we should do it in the working group, but again, we haven't done a formal consensus on it and comments. Ellen, I see your hand is still raised.
No, sorry.
Okay. Chuck, please.
Yeah, and this is on a different topic. Going back to the I think it's Annex 2 where the list of the working group members are. Have we gone out to the members that we haven't seen or heard from hardly at all and ask them whether they want to be included on this list, because most of the names on there I recognize as having participated at least in an email or something, but there are some that I'm not sure really ever participated, and I wonder if we ought to send them an email and say, do you want to be included in that? If they want to, I don't care if they're there. It seems to be a little bit inflated by people who ended up, you know, saying they wanted to be a part of it in the beginning and then backed away.
Thank you, Chuck. We did do that exercise for the initial report, but I will send out a note again to the list to confirm for this final report. Okay, seeing no other hands raised. So we've got about 20 minutes left. Let me just check to make sure that there's any other comments that I added here. Okay, yes, now I recall. There is one more. This will probably be the last item that I'll touch on with the working group for the call today, and this is in regards to the INGO protections, the recommendations that we have, and more specifically is stemming around the Scope 1, Scope 2 identifiers that we have listed. So what's listed here is that the ECOSOC list and the general consultative status is Scope 1, and then Scope 2 identifiers for the ECOSOC list is the special consultative status. And I think everyone recalls the quantity of names that are listed between the two. General consultative, I think, is approximately 120 or 30, maybe as many as 200 names, whereas the special consultative status is 2,000 plus, which may be multiple identifiers for the same organization, but we haven't really done a whole lot of research as to the sheer quantity. The reason why I'm mentioning this is what we have listed in our recommendation is that, you know, these organizations be bulk added to the Trademark Clearinghouse, mostly in the nature of trying to minimize cost. However, and this is kind of wearing an implementation hat, but it's something that the working group should be thinking about, is how do we manage a 2,000-plus organization list being bulk added into the Trademark Clearinghouse from a cost savings perspective? So there's really kind of two possibilities here. The first is there's some kind of centralized coordinator that goes and collects all the contact information that would be required to be bulk added into the clearinghouse. Or the secondary option is that it's on a voluntary basis by the INGOs that are listed on the special consultative list. However, there would have to be some kind of eligibility validation on the back end, and we've been advised that that is typically a more costly avenue in terms of getting them loaded into the house, into the clearinghouse. So I'm not sure how the working group wants to handle this, but and maybe it is a more an IRT issue than necessarily a policy-defining issue, but I do see this as a possible issue when we get to implementation. Chuck, if your hand is raised.
Yeah, just a question. Do these, either or both of these lists include acronyms?
Well, that's a good question. The general consultative list, I haven't looked at it in a month or so, but the shorter list, the general list, I believe does have AARP listed as the very first one, and I believe we discussed this before, that AARP has chosen in terms of their identity, they no longer use their full name. It is strictly just the four-letter word, AARP. That could potentially be construed as an acronym, but I think in terms of the general consultative list, it wasn't considered. And there may be one other entry that may be confusing like that on the general consultative list. As for the special consultative list with the 2,000-plus organizations, I'm not so sure whether acronyms are included in that or not. First glance, it looked to be full organization names or full names of organizations, but I can't say for certain that acronyms may or may not be included in them.
Yeah, this is Chuck again. The only reason I ask it is just to make sure we're not inconsistent by including all of those. I just want to make sure we're not inconsistent with other recommendations with regard to acronyms. And we may not be, but I that's why I ask it.
No, it's definitely a valid question. And if you'll notice, recommendation 8 here specifically touches on the acronym of Scope 1, Scope 2, and, of course, that we have divergence on this particular, which is more in line with just no support for protecting acronyms.
So what happens if there's an acronym on the, I think the general consultative list is okay based on what you described there. If the scope two includes some acronyms of organizations different than the ones you mentioned, is that going to be inconsistent with the fact that we're not recommending protection for acronyms?
And I think in terms of implementation, we'll have to highlight that if there are acronyms in the special consultative list, that they wouldn't be included. It would only be the full names.
Okay, and that's you're getting it exactly where I was going. So thanks,
Alan.
Yeah, I think we have to be just a little bit careful here. There are lots of corporate names that are in use that started out their life as an acronym, and the acronym and the meaning has long not been in use and is not part of their corporate structure. And I don't think that we can forbid someone from having, I mean, if I decide to create a brand new company called ABCX, it looks like an acronym, but you know, I invented that out of whole cloth. And I don't think we can prejudge that. So it may be unfortunate that an occasional name looks an awful lot like an acronym, but I think that's life.
Right. Thank you, Alan. And you know, I guess since we're on this topic, I should take you back up to Section 5.1 about the Red Cross, Red Crescent. And this may have bearing on, you know, the key recommendation or non-recommendation here in the working group about protection of acronyms, but I will highlight that, you know, there seems to be near full consensus, at least consensus level, that acronyms should not be protected. And what you'll find here within the Scope 2 and identifiers that we have listed within the Red Cross, they had listed out 6 acronyms that they were seeking to be protected. And what, conversely, what has been implemented within the Specification 5 of the new registry agreement, 4 of those 6 acronyms were added. So if the recommendation for not protecting acronyms is carried forward, it would seem that those would likely need to be removed. Again, this is really more an implementation issue, and it's certainly a comment that I had a while back as to whether we should flush out a third scope level to separate the full names from the acronyms for the Red Cross scope names here. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention. because I think that that will be a change down the road if all of the recommendations are adopted by not only the council but by the board. So I think for now that encompasses some of the questions that I had for the report. As I mentioned, there's going to be significant changes between this version and the next, partially because of the rearranging of the sections as well as rearranging the recommendations matrix as we have now and creating a separate section for recommendations that didn't have support as we discussed today. So, Thomas, that's all I have for the review of the report right now, and I'll turn it back over to you.
Thanks very much, Barry. Excellent work, and thanks, everybody, for the vivid discussion. So we will now wait for the public comment period to expire. As you can see from the document that's now up in the Adobe Connect room, there are further opportunities for the council to actually be warmed up to having its face-to-face meeting in Buenos Aires. So tomorrow I will give a brief update to the council and also encourage the council to start a discussion on the recommendations that will likely make it to the final report. So that will take place tomorrow. Barry, I'm not sure whether you want to say something now or whether that's an old hand, please.
I'll wait till you finish, but I do have a statement to make, please.
Why don't you just move on?
Okay. So as you see here in the AC room is our work plan. We've obviously finished today's meeting. The council meeting's tomorrow for what Thomas mentioned, as well as our reply period closing tomorrow. We have only one scheduled meeting between now and the deadline to submit motions and documents, which is next Wednesday, and that would essentially give us Thursday, Friday, and the weekend of next week to finalize the final draft of the report so that we can get it submitted. I'm curious with the amount of changes in the report and our short time frame to have it completed and approved by the working group. Should we tentatively try to schedule any time for Thursday or Friday of next week, approximately at the same time, in case we need to come together as a working group, or does everybody believe that we can try to tie this all up on the list after we meet next week in time?
Barry, that's actually an excellent suggestion. So any issues with tentatively setting up another call for next Thursday or Friday? I guess that we should at least offer to the group to have an extra discussion. So, Barry, if you could try to set something up for Thursday. You know, we will have our discussion on Wednesday, and then we will see on Wednesday whether we need more time as a group to discuss, so that I guess it would be good to have a fresh memory of our Wednesday's discussion and continue on Thursday. I see Chuck's hand up. Please.
Yeah, just a quick question, Thomas. Do we need to do a doodle poll? Because you start scheduling a meeting on another day, and you're liable to have a lot of conflicts. I'll respect your judgment on that.
Say that again. Chuck, I didn't get that acoustically.
Okay. Do we need to do a doodle poll on that special meeting? Because you set a meeting on a day that we don't have on our calendars. There may be lots of conflicts.
Right. Chuck, this is Barry. There's a ton of conflicts for next Thursday because there's definitely two pre-Buenos Aires GNSO policy webinars that will be going on, in addition to, I think, one or two other scheduled meetings. I'd like to do a doodle poll, although I don't think that that's possible. I'll try to schedule an hour in between the webinar sessions and other meetings that I see on the calendar, and I guess it's kind of a come-if-you-can opportunity, and perhaps I could even try to do it Friday very early, like maybe perhaps 13 or 14 UTC, so that perhaps any people in Europe that wish to participate can. I think Thursday we're just going to have to set a time and schedule it, and kind of the same for Friday, and hopefully we won't need them, but at least they'll be there if we have to.
Well, I guess, Barry, doodle polls are fine, but let's just say we set up times for both dates to at least give the group the opportunity to further discuss, and who can make it can make it. You know, I think it's such short notice that we won't be able to get everybody's agreement on the dates.
Agree. I'll get that going. Thank you.
Good. So, time is of essence. So Barry has taken away a little bit of weight of my shoulders in asking you for more time. I would have an additional request for you. Please do make sure that you get the buy-in of your respective groups to be in a position to sort of negotiate or give green light for whatever we then submit to the council. I guess there will be no time for you to actually have the final version of what we're producing to then properly rebound with your respective groups. So try to get a robust mandate to speak on behalf of your groups and to avoid any additional detours. Well, detour is too negative of a word for a very democratic approach, but I guess that you will understand that we need to have all of you being in a position where you can say yes or no to changes that we might need to apply to the report as we move on. So our hope is, or I guess we should say we will, make the submission deadline for the council, and then another opportunity for the council to deliberate the recommendations will be in Buenos Aires, and that will be during the weekend session. Something that sometimes misunderstood is that the weekend session on Saturday and Sunday is not a GNSO council session. It's a GNSO session. Everybody is invited to come join these public meetings. So please come see us. There is also remote participation. Please come and try to attend these sessions. I guess that you're assistance will be greatly appreciated when the council discusses this so that we can assist the council in making up its mind and making a decision. And then hopefully the council will decide on this during its ordinary session at the Buenos Aires meeting. So I have sort of said what I wanted to communicate to you today, but I see Chuck's hand is up. Please.
Thomas, I haven't seen the GNSO schedule for the weekend other than a draft version. How much time is allotted for the IGO-INGO session?
If my memory doesn't fail me, we have 45 minutes during the weekend session.
That's going to be really pressed, but okay, yeah.
But we have...
it's not a half hour. There's so many recommendations that it's really... 45 minutes is really minimal.
Which is true. But at the same time, you will remember that I already did a council briefing a few weeks back. I will do another council briefing tomorrow, and hopefully while the last council briefing was more a heads up that there's something to come and that people should sort of allocate resources to that, I hope that we will be able to discuss substance during tomorrow's call so that we will identify those areas that need further discussions and maybe sort of take those areas out of the discussion and off the table that are not that controversial. I hope that answers the question, Chuck. And
fine, thanks.
Great. Now, and with that, it's 2 minutes to the hour. I would like to thank everybody for their participation and for staying and being with us. And I'm looking forward to talking to you further and corresponding with you on the list. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
And Barry.